Alright, hi everybody and welcome to Lecture 56. In this American History program of History at Our House for the elementary class, today, American colonists will be in rebellion. Why? What happened? Why would they make this choice to go against their government? And of course, as we are going to see soon enough, move beyond rebellion to something far more profound, something that matters a lot more, which is revolution. So of course, we need to be clear on what those two things are. We will make sure that we are very clear on the difference between those things as we proceed here. But we are arriving at a point of rebellion because of a series of events that carry us to a certain moment in 1775. The rebellion that is a part of the American Revolution begins in 1775. Notice how much had already occurred by 1775. There had been many events. So, and we have spent quite a bit of time talking about these. I've been asking you to make sure if you understand what they are, why there were these things called writs of assistance in particular, what was the big deal about stamps, you know, things like that, and tea taxes and so on. So, it's important to know these things because we need to understand what it was that made America's colonists say, no more. No more. So, as we embark on the story of rebellion and revolution, I want you guys here to tell me, I'm going to give you guys a chance to tell me, what are the things here on this list? All the items in blue that I've highlighted here for you. I want you to look at this list and tell me what part of it doesn't make sense to you. In other words, if you had to choose, what part of this would make you feel most uncomfortable? You now have a chance to tell me how you feel about that. Just give me a second here. I apologize. I really thought I had confirmed the functioning of this, but I'm going back to it right immediately. Okay? So, there we go. Back to this. If you look at something and you don't understand it, I want you to tell me what it is. Anybody here want to tell me something? I want to ask me about a part of this that is still confusing to them. I am not asking you to tell me what you know. I'm asking you to tell me something which, in a sense, is more important. I want you to tell me what you don't know. And it's as simple as looking at the list and telling me, Mr. Powell, that one is fuzzy for me. All right, who's going to bravely step forward and tell me? The writs of assistance? The Sugar Act, maybe? What about that Declaratory Act? What's up with that? All right, Abby, I appreciate that you know many things, and I'm also happy to see that you are willing to tell everybody else that there's something that you're not quite clear on. So we're going to start with you, and hopefully others will follow your example. Abby, go ahead.
I'm not exactly sure why the Sugar Act is called the Sugar Act, because it doesn't really have that much to do with sugar.
Excellent question. Abby is asking, why do we have something called the Sugar Act? And it doesn't seem to have anything to do with sugar. Okay, good. And I like your question, Abby, because we were talking about the meaning of words and the importance of words. A writ, for instance, is something written, and it was called a writ of assistance, and we were looking at the words, right? And so you're seeing that there's a name here to something. It's called the Sugar Act. Doesn't seem to have anything to do with sugar. Okay, it actually does. Now, I couldn't fit that in on this timeline here. It has to do with sugar and something called molasses. I'm not enough of a chef to remember exactly what the relationship is between molasses and sugar. But they're related. They both have to do with sugar cane, the plant that was harvested in the Caribbean and is to this day. And then from that, you make both of those products. And you use those products then to make rum and other things, of course. Bake cakes and stuff, too. So, that's this Sugar Act had to do exactly with sugar and or molasses that was coming from the Spanish colonies and being brought in to the American colonies against the rules, right? So that's why it was called smuggling. Okay, Abby, does that help?
Yes.
Okay, great. Glad to be of assistance. All right, let's see if Henry and Wyatt can also give us one pointer about confusions and how to resolve them. Go ahead, guys.
I don't know what the Declaratory Act and the Torturing Acts.
Okay, what are those there in particular? I'm going to focus on the Declaratory Act, Henry, and then we'll see if anybody else wants to follow up. We can't do all of them every day, but I'm going to focus on the Declaratory Act for you, Henry. And remember, what does that word remind you of? Declaratory. What's another similar word to that? How about the something of independence?
Declare.
To declare is a verb. What is that phrase, the thing of independence from 1776?
Declaration.
Right. These are all, this is a word family here, Henry, right? So this was a declaration. And the declaration, the government declared that it has power to do whatever it wants. So, why is this an important moment in the story? Because up to this point, the government was doing this, it was doing this, it was doing this, it was doing this, and the colonists kept telling the British, you don't have the right to do that. And so in 1776, the British government declared, yes, we do. They were wrong, by the way, but they were claiming to have that right. Okay, they were saying, we do have the right to do this. And, well, now we get to, hopefully, Henry, does that help you?
Yes.
Okay, I'm very glad to hear that. Okay, so we'll get to others. If there are, you know, persistent confusions on any of these, that's fine. So, and then, you see, that's a really great question, Henry, because it takes us to that stage of an argument where it becomes violent. And you know this, and anybody that has siblings knows this, when you get to that point, when you're arguing with your siblings, or even with your parents, yes, no, yes, no, yes, no, you're not even talking about anything anymore, right? You're not having an intelligent conversation. All you're doing is you're yelling what you think is right. And you're not listening to the other person anymore. So that's what the Declaratory Act started to be like. It started to be a yelling match. We have the right. No, you don't. Yes, we do. No, you don't. And so it got worse and worse and worse until we reached the moment of Patrick Henry's declaration. And in that speech, remember, that ended with, give me liberty or give me death. In that speech, he predicted where this argument was going. He said, the next gale that sweeps from the north, the wind, right, will bring to our ears the clash of resounding arms. Our brethren are already in the field. Why stand we here idle? So he was predicting that the next thing that was going to happen was violence. And he was right. So the scene shifts back to Massachusetts. We have Patrick Henry, who's in Virginia, and he is talking about what's happening in Massachusetts. And so, good idea to have a map here and remind ourselves of certain locations. And so we know that this is the peculiar shape of Massachusetts, right? With this funny-looking trunk, and that we have the present capital and the most important city in Massachusetts, Boston, right? This is important to see here, because what had happened was Boston was under military rule, right? And the colonists now were having to figure out, what are we going to do to prevent this or stop this? And the military ruler, General Gage, realized that if the colonists wanted to attack him, they would probably need to get military supplies. And he knew that military supplies were found at a place called Concord. So, realizing that he was in danger here with his troops, he decided to send his troops, about 800 of his troops, from Boston to Concord to get those military supplies. And here we have the moment, we have the beginning of the rebellion, because realizing that the general was sending the troops, well, the colonists had messengers, and there was a particularly famous one. His name is Paul Revere. And there were others as well, another man named Samuel Prescott, another man named William Dawes. There were writers, and isn't this a pretty illustration of Paul Revere riding his horse? I think it's really pretty because notice how the horse, when a horse runs, there's a moment when it's really running as fast as it can. There's a really cool moment where none of the feet are touching the ground, right? That's a horse that's running at top speed. And he's yelling to, you can see the people are waking up in their houses and they're looking out the window. What's all the noise? And does anybody know what he's saying? Famous kind of phrase from the American Revolution. What was Paul Revere yelling to the people to wake up? What was he saying, Walker?
The British are coming!
The British are coming! The British are coming! Exactly! Wake up! We've got to stop them! We know what they're going to do! They are going to go get these weapons, these supplies, in order to expand their tyranny! So, who woke up and who got ready to do something about it? Oh, what a wonderful statue. We have a statue here that symbolizes the American colonists, and they were known as Minutemen. Anybody know why? Kind of a neat name. Why were they known as Minutemen? Nash?
Because they were basically ready in a minute.
Ready in a minute.
They were basically ready all the time. And so when somebody called for them, they were already basically ready and they could run out of their house.
There you go. In other words, they had their muskets. They were ready to go from whatever they were doing, you know, taking care of the farm or whatever, at home. They were ready to leave the house and go to wherever they were summoned in order to protect the colonists in whatever capacity. They were getting ready. They were forming what's called a militia, right? A citizen army. An army of armed citizens. So here's a great statue. It's called the Minuteman. You can see him proudly standing there, getting ready. And what is he getting ready to do? Well, here they are, the Minutemen, standing across on the way to Concord, right? From Boston, you pass through Lexington. So here's kind of the geography. And so on Lexington Green, which literally is green grass in the middle of Lexington, the Minutemen were aligned with their weapons, and they were basically saying, we're going to draw a line here, and we don't want to allow the British to go get those military supplies. And you can see this British force that it was advancing, and there they stood, two lines of men facing each other. Two lines of British citizens facing each other. What a tense moment. What was going to happen? The British commander yelled at the colonists and said to throw down their arms because they were in rebellion and he would have to deal with them. And they stood there and they had to decide what to do. And in this standoff, someone, I doubt we really know who, fired a shot. It's a famous shot. It's called the shot heard round the world. How does a war start? What is a war and how does it start? Abby?
War is a long period of time where people fight each other, and it starts with a battle, and that battle starts with a shot.
Yeah, well said. Well said, right? I think there's a famous proverb, something to the effect of, a journey of 10,000 miles begins with a single step. And in a war, as you say, Abby, which is a long period of time with many people fighting each other, begins with a battle, and a battle begins with a shot. And before you know it, it is a war. So this moment where the British and the American colonists stood against each other, aligned, and the shot was fired, is the beginning of the Revolutionary War. It is the beginning of the rebellion of the Americans against their British rulers. What a moment. That's why I love this statue of the Minuteman. He's kind of a symbol, and I kind of imagine him as the one who fired the shot. Right? One man, one shot. Fired by one man, begins a change in history that is the most important thing that's ever happened. Wow, that's amazing, right? Patrick, go ahead.
What do you mean?
What do I mean by what?
By one of the most important things, exactly.
Oh, okay, good question. What I mean is, the American Revolution gave birth to the United States. The greatest country in the world, in an America-centric world. Our world is what it is, right? With America at the center. How did that happen? We've talked about so many things this year. It could not have happened without the discovery of America by Christopher Columbus, right? Without Europeans knowing that America is here. It could not have happened without Europeans coming here, like the colonists at Jamestown and Plymouth. And it could not have happened without the American colonists rebelling against Britain. That's what I mean. That's what I mean. And that rebellion could not have happened, or I'm not going to say could not have happened. What I'm going to say is that rebellion started with a single shot. Right? That's the point. It's a moment. What an amazing moment. I think that even if this particular moment had not happened, probably there would have been another one. Right? So, but it just happens to be the moment that changed everything. After this, the American colonists of Massachusetts were at war with the British. And, of course, the question was, what about the rest? What about the rest of the American colonists? For now, the British colonists, the American colonists in Massachusetts were at war with the British. And so The British Army, which had a lot more men in it, was able to win this particular battle, and the Minutemen withdrew, and the British Army was able to get to Concord. But the good thing is they had been delayed long enough that the American colonists had managed to sneak off with all of the supplies. So they failed in their mission to get the supplies, and then they had to retreat back to Boston. And in the retreat back to Boston, the American colonists were fighting in that way now that small armies use to defeat big armies. They were fighting by shooting in small battles, shooting from behind the trees and attacking them in their retreat. And the British did not succeed in their mission. So now, here we are. After the battles of Lexington and Concord in 1775, the war has begun, and General Gage is back in Boston, and he's trying to figure out, okay, we're at war now, and so I've got to start preparing to defend Boston. And what he, at the time, it's probably a lot less obvious today and things have changed. At the time, there were hills surrounding the site of Boston. I don't have a map of it at the moment here myself, but there were hills and they were very important spots. If you are at the top of a hill, you have an advantage when you want to fight an enemy. And so there was a hill called Breed's Hill, and there was a hill called Bunker Hill, and General Gage realized that he would have to capture those hills and make sure that the colonists could not control them. Because to be at the top of the hill, well, actually, here's an interesting question. Why is it better to be at the top of a hill? Why is it better to be at the top of a hill in a battle than at the bottom of a hill? Does it matter, actually? Any guess, Patrick?
Yes, because then you can make bigger shoots. You can make
a shot bigger.
Yeah, you can throw things, and it may also be like an easier spot to make a good shot or something.
Yeah. Okay. So why can you make longer shots from the top of the hill? That's a really big advantage, right? What do we call that? What's that force that makes it easier to go downhill than uphill? Everybody knows that, right? Don't you guys know what that is? Well, Jeremy knows. Go ahead, Jeremy.
Gravity,
right? Exactly. Going uphill is hard. Going downhill is easier. And especially if you're going to have cannon, right? If you're going to shoot a long distance with a cannon, then shooting downhill is a big advantage. And so, yeah, it's just a part of military strategy. You don't want to be at the bottom of a hill when you're fighting somebody. You want to be at the top. So General Gage sent his troops, but the American colonists had already prepared. So look at this image of the battle. You can see the British troops fighting the way that they do, right? They're marching up the hill. But what do you see all the way up the hill? These are like fences here. There's a fence here. There's a fence here. So what, and then you can see all those red marks. You know, you can't make them out in particular, but what do you know that they are? Because they're the same as this. They're the same as this. What are they, Jeremy?
Blood and dead British.
Yeah, they're red coats, right? Does everybody know that the British were called the red coats? Because they had... Patrick is laughing because they had red coats. All right, that wasn't too hard, right? That's how we knew that that guy in the other painting who had a pink coat wasn't British, right? In our history through art, because he didn't have a red coat. So the red coats were the British. And isn't that nice of them? Isn't it nice that the British wore red coats? It's easier to shoot somebody who's wearing a bright red coat, isn't it? And so, yes, we can thank them for doing that. And so here they are getting slaughtered, going up the hill because it's not such a great way to fight, just marching up the hill in these organized way. But they were eventually able to win the Battle of Bunker Hill against the colonists because the colonists ran out of bullets. Oh no, they ran out of their supplies in this particular battle. So General Gage was in control of Boston, but that was just a temporary setback. What happened after this was that the American colonists from all the different colonies got together now, and they had the second Continental Congress. The second Continental Congress. So I don't have my... I should be starting to put these things here, right? We had the first one there. And then also in 1775, we have the Battle of Bunker Hill, which is what this latest image is, right around, you know, in Boston. Right in Boston, okay? And then finally, in 1775, we have the Assembly of the Second Continental Congress. All right, this is our timeline that's expanding here. And that meant that all the different representatives of the colonies were getting together, and they said, well, it's, you know, this is scary, isn't it? This is scary. We are in a situation where we are going to be at war with our mother country. And it was pretty natural for people to say, do we really want to do that? That's scary, right? Going to war is scary, isn't it? I mean, imagine, nobody here has had to do it, but maybe you have relatives, maybe you know, and people in your family have been soldiers in Iraq or Afghanistan, and it's really a scary thing. And so it's not surprising that the leaders of the colonies decided to try to avoid the war. There had been a battle, and Abby was telling us quite rightly that a war begins with a battle, begins with a shot. But a battle is not a war. Maybe you can have a battle and you can stop there and you can say, look, and you can say to the British king, is this what you want? This field of dead people. Is this what you want, George III? Please stop now. The king said, I'm not backing down. So often this is how battles turn into wars, that the two sides will not back down. They will not give up. And so George III refused. The colonists then issued a declaration of rebellion. You might be thinking of a declaration of independence. Not yet. A declaration of rebellion. That's not the same thing as a declaration of independence, right? This is called the declaration of the causes of taking up arms. It's a declaration of rebellion. It means we are rebelling. But that's it. It's not the same as we are trying to form a new country, right? Because there had been many rebellions in British history. What was the most important one so far that we have studied and that we go back to as an anchor fact of American history? What was the first great rebellion against the tyranny of kings? Rosetta?
Magna Carta.
Yes, the rebellion of the barons leading to the Magna Carta. Right? So rebellions are not the same thing as revolutions. A rebellion is when people fight against tyranny. But that doesn't necessarily make a revolution. Right? People all over the world have had rebellions in all different countries throughout history for thousands and thousands of years. So this was the beginning. Right? And so they're saying, we're going to have a rebellion. And at this point, they hired George Washington, and they said, we're going to put you in charge of the Continental Army. And George Washington marched to Boston with 10,000 militia troops. And General Gage realized that he could not hold on to the city, and so he escaped from Boston, and the colonists were back in charge of Massachusetts. So at least the rebellion started off nicely. The rebellion started off nicely. Washington, in charge of the Continental Army, had taken back Massachusetts. Okay, great beginning. Everybody was thrilled. It's early 1776. Things are going well, at least at the beginning. But is this going to be it? And also, what is it all going to mean? What is it all going to mean? In other words, what were the colonists going to do? Why were they rebelling? Was the big question. Because, as I said, if you have a rebellion, well, maybe at the end, like so many times in British history, all you do is go back to having a king again. Is that what they were going to do? At this point in the story, not everybody was agreed. What were they fighting for? What was the reason for doing this? Walker, you want to try to answer that?
They were doing this because of all the taxes and all the things that the British did that were unjust.
Truly, that is right. Now, but in a pot, those were the negatives, right? Those were the negatives, and all of those, we can all group them together under the word tyranny. They were fighting against tyranny. But fighting against something is not enough. You've got to fight for something. If you are going to die in a war, there you need a reason to do that. What were they fighting for? Was the real question, Rosetta?
They were fighting for liberty.
They were fighting for liberty. Exactly. Patrick Henry said it. Give me liberty or give me death. So the question then was, what does that mean, liberty? Is it just good enough? Is liberty just going back to the same old, never-ending argument with the king? You fight battles, you win the battles, and then the king gives up and says, okay, I'll let you have your way for a while, until the next time? Is that liberty? Living with the constant expectation that soon, and just around the corner, is the next wave of tyranny. Over and over and over. Is that liberty? Patrick is shaking his head no. Right? Living with tyranny just around the corner is not liberty. So this was what the founders were going to have to name now, once and for all. They were going to have to look at history, and they were going to have to say, it's not necessary to merely have a compromise with the king. In fact, it's not desirable. There's a better way to have liberty. And we know this because we have studied history. You don't need a king. In fact, it's better if you don't have one. Such as, who had demonstrated that the founders knew about because they knew history. Last reminder question for today. Sigourney?
Romans.
The Greeks and the Romans. Governments without kings. Aha. The Greeks and the Romans, governments without kings. So now we're getting closer to the idea of a revolution. All right, tomorrow we will see the most important declaration. We have arrived at 1776, and we will have the ultimate statement of what the rebellion is for. It's for creating a new kind of government, which is a revolution.
Woohoo!
Exactly, woohoo! Or, as we would say, huzzah! All right, everybody. Talk to you tomorrow about the revolution. Bye for now.
Bye.
Bye-bye.